You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to Fix It and Flip It. The current real estate market is ripe for rehabbing. If you want to learn how to buy the right property at the right price and learn how to project and control costs, then you've come to the right place. Our host, Tony Raffin, is from the number one REMAX team in southeastern Michigan. And Kevin McClellan is Mr. Flipper Extraordinaire. Now, let's welcome Tony and Kevin. This is Fix It and Flip It.
Wow. What an intro. How long did it take you to come up with that, Don?
This is our inaugural episode, Kev.
Yes, it is. Just me and you.
We're entrepreneurs.
You're going to get a ton of airtime, just two of us here.
Well, you know, I've never been at a lack for words, right?
No. Just, you know, let me get a couple words in. That's all I ask.
Listen, to all our friends out there who are following us, because you're probably the only ones who are going to pay attention to this right away. Thanks for tuning in. We've got a good show for you. And Kevin, why don't we go into our intros for people that don't know who we are?
Yeah, with this the first show, I think that, you know, the point of this show is obviously a little bit everything when it comes to real estate, right? Obviously, it's going to be heavily focused on the real estate investment game, but we're also going to touch on, you know, mortgage rates, just the buying and selling, the retail side of it that you're one of the best at. We'll touch on the, you know, the flipping, buying and holding, renovating and selling,
which you're an expert at.
That's my forte.
Yeah,
sure.
That's your forte.
And I don't mind. I actually look forward. I get so many calls a day, a week, of people asking me to get them into flipping, to wholesale them a house, and show them how to flip a house. So I think this is a great, you know, I'm one of these people, I don't believe that you can create your own competition, right? I think if you just do it the best, then, you know, the best always rises to the top. So I look forward to being able to pass along, good contacts, the knowledge, experience, do's and don'ts. If I can avoid people from running into some of the pitfalls that I did, then this show will be wildly successful.
Competition breeds success, you know?
Yeah.
It really does. And you'll know what you do. People don't really understand the level at where you got and how you got there. They just see you're there. So I think we were talking on another show that we were on. They don't see the pitfalls and everything that you've gone through to get to where you're at. So why don't we give us can you give me a quick cliff notes on where you came from?
Yeah. You know, like I said on the other show, back 7 years ago, I got into the real estate game. Was going to get laid off from my day job, and had a little money saved up from some other businesses that I exited. And at the time, it was the bottom of the market. We didn't know it, right? We didn't know if it was at the bottom, going to keep going down. But about 2010 is when I bought my first couple rental properties. Leveraged those, went and flipped a couple houses, bought some more properties. Met guys like you that helped me find even better deals and create those relationships. And ever since then, it's just been a thing of a game of buying a couple rentals, going to flip a couple properties, and just continuing to dump that capital, turn it as fast as possible, just keep it rolling. And now it's multiplying and not pulling out and not sucking that cash out and spending it on other things, on, you know, clothes.
R8.
Well, yeah, we got nice. Got to buy a nice car every now and then.
Yeah.
But you're just continuing to roll that money as fast as possible into the real estate. So it's just
Can I interrupt you on that one?
Yeah.
What you just said about moving as fast as possible, and I know once again you guys are going to have to bear with me because I am definitely ADHD. Because I, you know, look at the cat; it's just the way it is.
Squirrel.
Yeah. So basically, what ends up happening is instead of buying a property and taking forever to flip it, like a year or whatever. If you can take that same amount of money, and I'll give it to you this way, we'll get into our percentages and how we figure that out. But by turning stuff over quicker, you can move through quicker, and you can actually get a higher rate of return than you would sitting there. I think in the grocery stores, they call it shelf space. So how many times can you turn that shelf space over in a
turnover,
year?
Sure.
Yeah, turnover. So
yeah,
really,
and like,
really
so I have a number, like I like to turn a dollar 2.5 times per year.
Right.
So I don't like to buy and renovate and take more than 5 months, essentially, give or take, to turn that property. I like to try to turn at least 2.5 times a year. And then I take that money, and if I have more renovations coming through, I'll buy those. If I have some rental properties that I've identified and want to add that to my portfolio. So to circle back, you know, I've created a rental portfolio of, you know, 23 homes. I flip about 20 properties a year, and we're talking full renovations, as you know. I mean, down to the studs, yep. Whether it's putting $20,000 or I think I put $150,000 into a property before. So really, that's kind of my forte. You know, there's other things that you can get into, land contracts, things like that. I'm not really big on those. I strictly just like having either my rental properties or my renovation, you know, fix and flip.
You're pretty strict on your path. You know, you know what you need, you know what you do, and you don't deviate from it. This is what I do. This is what I'm good at. I'm not going to buy it, hold it, carry the paper and do, you know, land contract.
Yeah.
Like that. You're very disciplined in what you do. And I've noticed that, you know, we've known each other, what now, 7-8 years.
Yeah.
You've been very, very disciplined, to the point where you sacrifice. You don't even own your own house.
No.
I mean, literally, you do not own the house that you live in. You rent a condo.
Yeah, well, there's reasons for that. I mean, back, you know, it's a debt to income. It's lending ability. It's things like that where I didn't have a ton of cash to start with. I didn't have $1 million in the bank.
Right.
So I had to leverage every single dollar, every single asset to try to grow my rental portfolio and the amount of cash available to be able to flip as many properties as possible in the given time frame. And I'm glad I did, because now look at where the market is, which I'll let you touch on in a minute. But from where we are now as opposed to 2010, where the values are for the same house, wow, you know, it's
huge.
It's huge. It's changed. But yeah. So I'll wrap up about myself. I think I've got a ton of knowledge to pass on in terms of the renovation game, the rental game, how to deal with tenants, how to deal with cities on rental inspections, the whole flipping side, dealing with cities and permits, dealing with contractors, coming up with capital, making connections with realtors. So all that I think I have to be able to pass on to our viewers, and look forward to answering questions and helping people that want to get into this game. So let me flip the script and tell us about yourself. I mean, What is your forte? What do you do? I know a ton of people know you're known all over the Tri-County area, but for those that don't, what do you hope to pass on, you know, over the course of this show to people?
Don't get into real estate. No.
Go see your therapist if you want to get into real estate.
Yeah, go see a therapist before you get into real estate. You know what? I started 1990 is when I got into it. 1994, I started working in a place. I haven't moved around a lot. I've been at a Red Carpet Kime was my original place that I worked at. And then in 2000, I came over to Remax. I've never looked back. In 2007, I bought the brokerage and became a broker owner. And then I said, you know, this is crazy babysitting a lot of people, because it really is. You get a lot of turnover. Everybody thinks that you can be a real estate agent. Anybody can be a real estate agent. Spend $200 and 40 hours in school, and boy, you're a superstar, and you go make $500,000 a year. Well, that's not the case. That's not the way it is. It's a lot of work.
These part-time agents make it difficult on your job. For you professionals that do it right and do it full-time?
Part-time agents, that's a good question.
I know, we could get on a whole other show.
It's a great question, though. Part-time,
not to dog anybody, but I mean, it's...
No, but they've just got no business being in the business, because they really don't know what they're doing, and they're doing you a disservice because they don't know the ins and outs, the quirks, the relationships that we have with other agents we're able to get things done at a different rate. Our relationships and everything that we forged is almost... you can't put a price on it. You can't put a valuation on the connections and the contacts and the knowledge that we have. Just, I mean, think about one little tiny iota tip that I might have that, and how many times have I saved you a ton of money? Yeah. Okay.
Well, you probably figure you've seen it all, right? 20 years or however many in the business.
28 years.
You've kind of seen it all. I mean, there's times where you got to get creative to make a deal work, and there's a way to do it legally to do it. There might be some gray areas, and we'll work in those.
Yeah.
But I mean, an agent that does 3 transactions, 5 transactions a year, opposed to you doing 200 or 300, however many you do.
7,000 transactions in my career.
So 7,000. Like, touch on, you've seen it all.
I've seen it all.
There's hurdles that you've had to jump through to get deals done. And the stories I hear that a new young agent, it's nothing against them. They're going to learn. And you got to be a first-time agent once, sometime.
Absolutely.
But having a guy like you is worth his weight in gold, isn't it?
I think it's even more than that. And when you take a look at some of the things that we do, you know, a normal agent will say, "Well, I don't do that." You know, how many times have you seen me come out to a job site that you're on and sweep floors and let's get this garbage thrown out. Let's do what we got to do. People are like, "Well, I'm a real estate agent. I don't do that." Well, you do whatever you got to do to get the deal done and make your customer happy. At the end of the day, you're not only are you my friend and my business partner, but you're also my client. And you know, you deal with other agents and you see the difference between what I do and what other people do. But at the end of the day, the relationship that you forge with the people that you work with, they're the ones who bring you more business and let you do what you do, flipping properties. Because as we know, as the economy has gotten better, it's harder to find the distressed properties. It's
almost impossible right now.
Stop. Right. It's almost like at this point right now, let's just take our money, sit it in the bank, and let's sit there, wait for the deal. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But you are not one that sits there. You get antsy when that money's sitting in the bank, and you're like, I got to find something. So you put your feelers out there to people like me. What do you got? What's coming up? Where can I – what's my next deal?
I think that's – you touch on a point I was going to bring up of – realtors work with more than one investor.
Absolutely.
And investors work with more than one realtor, right? And that's the right way to do it. I don't believe either side should have all their eggs in one basket. You know, if you're the best realtor and you're going to bring me the most deals, then we're going to do the most business together. And vice versa. So
it works that way for the most part, but some people, you know, they like the service that I can bring to the table. I have certain investors that only deal with me, but I also, you know, I cater to them. I do what I need to do. And then you get the guy that comes in and says, yeah, I want to start flipping houses. And he has no clue what's going on. That's kind of why we did, you know, why we started this podcast, because we wanted to be able to help people to understand the ins and outs and the relationships that, you know, we have both built during this. Me with investors, you with realtors, and both of us with contractors.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're only as good as the people that are around you.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that we hope we bring to the show. And I know that we're going to incorporate throughout the weeks as we go forward. I mean, there's so many different facets of putting a house together. I mean, you just put one together. Obviously, I put a lot of them together.
We put them together across the street from each other.
From one another. We were neighbors there for a minute. I had to sell mine and get away from my crazy neighbor, Tony. But, you know, from cabinet guys to carpet flooring to countertops, whether it's granite, quartz, formica, et cetera, tile guy, roofing, foundation repair guy, electrical plumbing, HVAC, a window guy, glass door, mirror guy, shower door guy, cement guy, brush, shrub removal, junk removal, glass.
Yeah, the trash guys. Trash guys are probably some of our most important friends, knowing that, you know, sometimes it doesn't pay for us to get a dumpster and have laborers do that. The trash guys come in, come out, it's off the job. And at the end of the day, the timing or the lack of downtime for you, because you know you've got something scheduled, get somebody in there, get them out, and you're on the next day. You know, we're not into these projects like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the best things we'll bring to our viewers is good contacts for guys that are high quality guys and gals that show up, do the job, you know, ask for money when the job's done, not paid in full before they do anything. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the biggest problem and question that I get from people is, how do you deal with the contract? Where do you find contractors? Do you have this guy? Do you have a flooring guy? Do you have a granite guy? I mean, every week I'm getting a message on Facebook or a text.
We get the same thing as
realtors. Yeah, you do too as a realtor.
Somebody
closes
on a house, and I'm not talking about a flip, but even a rental. So, you know, who do you got that can paint good? Who do you got that can, you know, do concrete work? Who's doing tile work? You know, hey, you got a drywall repair guy, and people. I tell everybody. I should probably open up a referral service. It could be called Tony's list instead of Angie's list.
Because
of all the people that I know. And usually, I mean, you can't guarantee everybody's work, but for the most part, the way we build our referrals is our personal. They've done the work for us. They've done a good job. I can refer them out. I don't make any money on them. I like to be able to give them work. And as long as they do good work, it makes me look good as a realtor. at the end of the day, sometimes it comes with a liability. Your guy was a jackass. He didn't do a good job. You know, it's like, oh, man.
Oh, there's times where I wish I didn't refer people out.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Well, you know what they say? No good deed goes unpunished.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the truth. But I think we got a good list of guys to come on and talk and educate people in certain areas and in certain facets of the renovation game, the real estate game. So I think that will be that'll be huge for people. I know we got some great people lined up that'll come on. And
we do. I think the list of people that we can bring on to this show to help our listeners understand what it takes to do something and to do it right, not to do it half-assed, because you know, we all know when you do something half-assed, it always comes back to bite you.
And there's plenty of guys out there doing that, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I hope that's what we can do, is help people realize the right way to renovate and sell a property, or to fix and hold a rental property, or to get their house ready for the market. I mean, we're going to touch on everything, not just the investment game, but anybody that wants to call in or comment, we'll answer all your questions about the real estate investing game. If they have a house ready and they want to hire you to list it and put it on the market, we can definitely let them know where to put those dollars. If they have $5,000, do I put a new roof on? Do I replace my mechanicals? Do I put a new driveway in? Because all that does is make their house sell quicker for more dollars and help you sell the property, right?
Without question. I think, and it's also like when you and I go over one of your houses, well, should I do this or should I do this? Or should I put the windows in, or should I do the tile floor, or should I just paint it over and leave the windows? And we go back to that same thing. What's the way to get the biggest buyer pool? The biggest buyer pool brings you the most attention. The most attention ends up giving you the most buyers. And then you can go into that frenzy. You know, we just had a house the other day. We had 30 offers. 30 offers on one house.
It's crazy.
The
market's crazy.
$20,000 over asking. Appraisal contingencies waived. Cash money. We don't care. We want the house. And it's not like we undervalued it. We priced it right. And we make sure that, you know, it's presentable, and when people get there, it looks good. I mean, it's happening, and it's happening every day. So, I mean, that's for the most part, that's what we're seeing. You want to do some repairs, get it to get your biggest buyer pool.
Tony, you know, we're going to get asked the question, Tony, of how do I find a property to flip, right? The new flipper, the new investor, probably the question we'll get the most is, and that I get myself, is where do you find the properties? I mean, do you want to touch on that, since it is getting so hard, you know, to find them?
Well, a lot of that stuff is going back to the relationships that you forged with a bankruptcy trustee, with a probate attorney, with a judge, with government officials, with just people in your sphere of influence, and everybody that you know. Somebody's aunt passed away. They've got a house they got to get rid of. Do they really want to do the repairs, or do they want to just get rid of it and let somebody do it, dial it up really nice, so you can get a homeowner that's going to come in and love and cherish it? There's a lot of sentiment in these houses.
Yeah, part of what I tell people is just let people know, as simple as it sounds, let people know you're in the game. Like, put the word out to friends and family and realtors, and you got to start building and creating your own network. I've been flipping over 120 homes for 7 years now, and my best deals have been over the last year. Every year they've gotten better and better.
Even though you thought they were going to disappear, because you were scared. I don't know what to do. I remember last year you're like, I got to buy some houses. I can't find any houses. Then all of a sudden,
comes in waves.
Two
like
months later,
else.
You got 6-7 houses, and you're working on all these at one time.
Isn't that real estate, though? I mean, in your business?
Yeah.
I mean, you have a flurry of listings or buyers, and then it kind of lulls out, and you say, oh, man, we're a little slow for a couple weeks.
It's time to take a vacation.
You know? Yeah, you and vacation. I don't think so.
Yeah. You need to take a break sometime, buddy.
I can't. Yeah. I got a problem. I got a house hoarding problem.
He's a hoarder. He's buying houses.
I mean, if I see a margin and I can make X amount of money, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to find a way.
And
that's something else we'll touch on too throughout the weeks of the show, is funding. How do you get funding? Tapping into equity. We'll bring some lenders on.
Yes.
So maybe some private lenders is another way. You might pay a little stiff interest, but again, that's just looking at the return on your investment, right? Your ROI, as they call it, or your cap rate. And we'll get in and we'll touch on those things, because I'm sure a lot of questions we'll get is, you know, how do you figure out whether it's a good investment? And to me, that's something that each individual has to answer, of what their time's worth, what their energy's worth, and what their money's worth. You know, I know that I like to make a 25 to 30% minimum on an investment after all cost. That, to me, that's good, right? But to somebody else, if they made 10% on a $100,000 investment, they might be okay with that.
Well, if they're going to do the work, they should pay themselves for the work. You started off doing sweat equity and doing work yourself. Now you're hands off. You hire your contractors. Everybody does what they need to do, and then you're okay. But if somebody's going to come in and do the work, don't discount your labor for, to say you made more money. You worked for that money. Where you come into the table, now you hire everybody out. And since everybody's hired, it works out well for you. You don't have to get dirty, especially when you're managing multiple projects. And I get it. You're going to Home Depot or you're going to Lowe's,
yeah,
or you're going to a supply house and getting what you need to do. You're keeping control of costs. But when it's all said and done, it's a real simple factor here. If you're going to do the work, you got to get paid. Even though you may not have the money in your hand, it's called sweat equity.
Right.
And that's how you build up a portfolio with simple, like, instead of paying somebody to trash the house out, I'll trash the house out myself.
Save $500.
Right. You save $500. Now, that money that you saved, all it's doing is going to build up your equity. And at the end of the year, let's say you flip two houses at 100 grand a piece, 20%, all of a sudden you got 40 grand in equity. And then maybe you won't have to borrow as much from the guy that you borrowed from. Maybe by the end of 2 years, you're paying cash for houses instead of financing houses. So you're cutting that middleman out of the interest.
Or you can do another project. You can do three instead of two.
Correct. That's going to take time, because even you know, when you were doing one, it was difficult. And then when you went to two, it was difficult.
Oh, one deal depended on the next. One had to close. I had one more lined up, and those were some sleepless nights. I mean, if that deal fell apart and restarted the process another 30 to 45 days, that could wipe out another deal.
Absolutely.
To make another $20,000 or $30,000.
Yeah, you got to be prepared. I think preparation.
But I think you said to it, if you want to get into this game, you better be ready to put some sweat equity into it. If your first flip, and I had a buddy that did this, and he wanted to hire everything out. I know more than one guy that just wanted to buy the property. They watch the shows. We call this guy, that guy, that guy. It's super simple, and we're going to make $20,000. It doesn't happen like that. And I think the best thing for people that are getting into the investment real estate flipping game is to do the work themselves, what they can do, and be on site talking to their contractors that are skilled guys, that are licensed guys that know code. Because I'm not a licensed builder, but I probably know just as much as a lot of them, because I've asked questions. When do you need a glazed window? How high do hand railings need to be? Your rise run on your treads on front porch steps. I mean, because a lot of the same things keep coming up on every property. I mean, we're not reinventing the wheel. I mean, if it's a house that we're flipping, you've probably got, 50 things that need to be addressed, and it sounds like a lot, but, gutter extensions out from the downspout. Cracks in the driveway. I mean, just simple things. But you learn so much by being there and talking to people and asking questions. I know you do the same.
We do it every time we go on a home inspection. We have certain home inspectors that we work with, and one of them, it's almost like you could hear me speaking his words. It was almost like I was trained by him.
We've heard it how many times? You should.
Thousands of times.
And you probably save your buyers a ton of money by not even letting them put an offer on certain homes, right? And we'll get into that. We'll bring a home inspector on to educate our buyers and our sellers. But, I mean, that's where a good realtor, an experienced realtor comes into play, even for me, is I get so many realtors that bring me deals, and the numbers just aren't even close to working. And that's
right.
Fine. Like, keep bringing them to me because I love and appreciate it, and one out of 10 usually works. But, I mean, it saves a ton of time when you have an experienced realtor that knows the investment game that can vet a lot of these projects before they even bring them to you.
Well, I like to say no more than I like to say yes, because at the end of the day, my name has to go on whatever the heck we put on, not you per se, because you pretty much know, but somebody that's not as seasoned, they'll be able to take a look at something and they'll say, we want this house. And I'm the first guy that says, I'm not selling you this house. There's no way, because you're going to be buried into it. You're not going to make any money. And then who are you going to hate? The damn realtor who sold you the house.
Well, and I tell the realtors that I work with that, if I buy the house, I say no to a lot of properties. Like you said, like saying no more.
Right.
I say no to a lot. You know me, probably one out of 10.
You probably say no more than you say yes.
Well, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. But I tell everybody, when I get that one property, we're all going to be happy.
Yes.
I'm going to be happy because I'm not stressed out, maybe breaking even, making $5,000 on a $200,000 investment. I'll be happy. The realtor is going to be happy because I'm going to do the renovation justice and do the property right and make it an easy sell for the realtor on the back end.
Speaking of the easy sell on the back end, here goes my ADHD again. When you flip a property, it's funny. And I know it's not just you, and I know it's the economy, but you don't keep a house on the market for long. They're done that well.
Well, you could touch on buyers right now want houses that are 100%. They want them 100% rehabbed. I mean, they want to be able to bring their furniture in, maybe go buy new furniture, hang a TV on the wall if there's not already one in my house.
Right. They don't even want to put carpet in. They want it done.
They want it done.
Right.
100%. They want to know how much their payment is. and they want to move in the house.
It's the old $99 down, $99 a month trick. It's all they want. What's my payment? Can I afford to live here? And as long as I don't have to do nothing, I can move my stuff right in. I'm ready to go. And that's what they want. And that's what I think you bring to the table as far as, you know, the retail community, your end buyer. And then people are like, okay, well, how do you make money? You make money when you sell it. No, you don't. You make money on the buy. Because if you buy wrong, I mean, you've been tricked into a lot of properties, like the one property with the garage falling in. Then you'd have to jack it up, yeah. And that cost was a surprise cost.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many times you open up a wall and you find, you know, rotted wood or something. You got to go back in and fix that. How do you do it? That's where the buying process is the most important part.
Sure, because as hard as you look at a property or as hard as I look at a property and inspect it, I mean, between the both of us, we can pretty much do a full home inspection. We know we're going to redo everything on a house when we flip it and renovate it anyways, right? I mean, my renovations lately have been full renovations. I don't save a switch. I don't save a cover plate. I don't save a piece of molding. I mean, everything, really, we take it down and just redo it.
Nothing,
it's almost cheaper in a sense to do that than trying to like caulk in and repaint trim that's been caulked over and painted and sanded, you know, since 1960, you know, 17 times. I mean, just rip it off for 67 cents a linear foot and replace it, right?
And hopefully by the time we're done with this, you guys will all understand where Kevin's getting at with these prices. He knows them in his head. And if you've done it so many times, you know who's got the trim, you know who's got it, you know what it's going to cost to install it. So you know at the end of the day, I'm ripping all that out. Because somebody comes in and looks at a house and sees trim, it's there, even though you look at it differently. It's got too much paint on it. There's too much goop on it. We're all over the place. This just doesn't work.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, to circle back to what you're, I know me and you both, we both got off on a tangent. I'm sitting here trying to think about what the hell we were talking about. but we're talking about, you know, we can only see so much. Me and you can walk through a home. We can pretty much do an inspection, but you have to buy the property right. And buying it right is to where you have that margin for the what ifs, because we can't go and tear apart walls and see what the wiring looks like behind it. We can't tear apart the walls and see whether the insulation is sufficient or not. We can guess, you know. So you have to buy it with that margin, knowing the worst case scenario is, even if I have to do an extra $5,000 or $10,000 worth of work on top of my budget, then I'm still going to make my 20% to 30% right. return, or 25% return, or whatever your number is.
Yeah, it's like that's why they call it the visual, the limited visual inspection, as the inspectors would call it, because
there's certain things I can't see.
Right, you can't see.
You can't go in and tear apart it, you know, somebody's existing home.
Can't check an air conditioner in the middle of winter.
Exactly. You know, you can guess. You can look at
you
it.
You can guess.
Visually, like you said, visually inspect and kind of guess. And what do they call it? An educated guesstimate. But so yeah, I mean, like you said, buying the property on the front end. Buying it right, I call it reaching. Don't reach for a property just because you have money sitting there and you got a money guy saying, hey, let's do a property together. Go find us one. When you start reaching, it never turns out good.
Correct.
You overpay for it. You kind of mess up the game for all the investors that know what they're doing and know if a property should be bought at $75,000 and you're paying $90,000 for it. You're kind of screwing up the game. You're eating so much of the margin.
Then you didn't make any money.
And you didn't
make
any money.
So now you worked all this time for nothing. And I'm hoping that that's what we can keep people from doing, overpaying. It's all about everyone needs to make money. The realtors need to make money. You know how I said that first. The investors need to make money. The buyer's got to be able to buy a house at a fair price and make sure that everything's the way it is. And all your contractors got to get paid fairly.
Yeah.
If everybody makes money, you know, we know the old theory, how money spends 25 times. You know, one house flip really supports a lot of people. So
if it's done right.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. You've flipped 120 houses. What's your average sale cost? 150,000?
Yeah, at least. Not probably with this market. Yeah, 150 to 200, 250.
Do the math.
Yeah.
Do the math. That's a lot of jobs.
Isn't it about creating a team, though, of people from the title to title people to the back office like you have with your ladies there who are phenomenal?
Absolutely.
You guys in the office, you know, to the home inspector, to whoever's taking the pictures, the photographer. I mean, we kind of put together a whole team of people to be able to get this from the initial inception of buying it through the renovation to the after repair and putting it on the market.
Yeah, I think that's really a huge key. And I've built my team, has been going. This is my 18th year with my team, and my girls have been with me the majority of the time. And they listen. They keep me in check because somebody's got to keep me in check. And I can find the deals, but you know, at the end of the day, you got to keep that stability in there where these people are doing what they need to do. And I think we've done that in somewhat of a decent way. And once again, let me go out and do what I do, build the relationships. As long as I can back up what I say I can do, same with you. As long as you can back up with what you say you can do. And I think, you know, the money is in in the finished product when we're done. Here it is, and this is where we've gotten to.
Yeah, I mean, that team, you know, plays a role in what we're going to do for people is kind of help them through that acquisition process, try to identify the property.
And make them feel comfortable about it, too.
And what they should buy it at. Yeah. Getting through the renovation of the project is the next step, right?
Yep.
I mean, you got to muddle through it. There's going to be bumps. I mean, listen, if you think that it's going to go super smooth, it's not like new builds. I mean, we can touch on new builds in that part of real estate investing, but that's kind of a whole other ballgame. That goes in certain steps, and one step after another.
Right.
You know, it's kind of nice and clean. But with the renovation, I tell everybody, it's organized chaos. Guys tripping over each other, things done out of order possibly because some guy's available now and not next week, and it'll hold the project up. So what we're going to do is try to help get people through the renovation process because it's not easy. And I'll tell everybody right now, there's no perfect way to do it. Every investor is going to have their own little system, their own little machine, their own process and way of doing it. But we'll impart our way of that I do it. And then once it's fixed and it's repaired, how do you figure out your after repair value and how do you market it and how do you get that thing sold, like you said, the first day or first week in this market?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I've walked in a lot of rehabs, and I know you don't let me walk in any of yours.
You're not allowed
anymore.
In mine anymore. You spend too much of my money. You tell me I got to replace everything. I mean, if you had it your way, you'd gold plate the toilets. You know, you'd add an addition on every house. You spent $300,000, I'd make no money, but that's okay. I say that just joking.
I like to
You have a good eye. You have a good eye. It's good for you to come through. I've looked at the project for 6 to 8 weeks, 12 weeks maybe. I'm sick of looking. I might miss something. So it's always good for a realtor like you with the eye that you have to be able to come in and kind of take a look at it.
I guess I don't have the blinders on.
No,
it's different. So if I look at it every day, I'd probably see it in a different way. So it's nice that I come in at the end.
And you have no clue where the budget is. So
I have no clue. Well, I think that's even better because then this way you put reality onto it. All right, we can't do this, but we can do this. You know, what's going to bring the most bang for the buck? Let's make sure this is fixed over this. And I'm not using certain terms because we don't know what those different items are. And normally, like I said, when you're doing a rehab, kitchens are already always done. Bathrooms are always done. Basements could be differently. We're going to finish this or not finish that, or we're going to put a roof on it, or maybe, you know, we can get away without a roof.
I mean, that's the whole subjective part of it that every investor, and again, we'll help them kind of make those decisions. But at the end of the day, they got to decide whether, you know, is 5 or 10 years left on the roof of that life acceptable or not. Are they going to put one on? Do they think if they put $3,000 in a new roof, are they going to get 5 or 7 back, or at least that $3,000 back and a quicker sale?
That goes back to my point that I was talking about previously, bring the bigger buyer pool to the table. Sometimes the money you put, you're just going to recoup that money, but you bring 10 extra buyers to the table.
Sure.
You know,
some guys won't do it though. They're just cheap, right? I mean, you run into it. You work with a lot of investors.
I'm
not the only one.
No, I mean, we've got deals where, okay, the house doesn't have a garage. Okay, well, what do? We put a garage on it or not? Well, if we spend $15,000 on a garage, we could probably get $20,000 more out of the house. Is it worth it for that extra $5,000 to do that? Or should we just take the lower amount of money without the garage? Sometimes people don't have the time. Sometimes people don't have the resources.
Time of year might play into that.
Imagine, though, having a house without a garage. How many people want a house without a garage? Your buyer pool significantly shrinks.
That's like being on a major mile road. It's like not having a basement, right? I mean, they're all
corner lot.
Corner lot, not corner lot.
You've done houses on major mile roads.
Yeah.
You bought them, and you know, you always keep your end price lower, but we've been surprised. I mean, the numbers that you've been getting for your houses, I mean, they're practically setting records.
Yeah, they are.
I mean,
per square foot.
Every time you tell me I'm going to ask this, and I look and I'm like, what are you, nuts? And then you get it. And I'm like, that ain't going to appraise. And then you get appraised.
Yeah.
So you're doing the same thing, but you're doing it at such a high level. These other people that are doing it, I think they come in and they try to follow. And
it's a bit of an evolution, though, and it comes down to sharpening your pencil with your contractors and buying the property like we talked about right on the front end. To have that extra 5 or 10 to put into it. I'm probably putting 5 or 10 extra thousand in these houses right now. Now, if this was 4 or 5 years ago, I don't know. Maybe I don't think I was doing it, to be honest with you. It's a bit of an evolution.
You weren't. No. I've seen you evolve over the last 8 years.
But the values have also gone up to a point where I'm getting that. If I put a dollar in, I'm getting at least that dollar out, if not $1.50 back out on the back end.
That's true. That's true. You know? And the market's different in different
real
states.
Real estate's volatile. We don't know what next year is going to do. We don't know what next month's going to do.
And all these predictions, who knows? Speaking of predictions, the economy.
Yeah.
I mean, not to change, like, but this is something that's really important to what we do with interest rates going up right now. And when we bring a mortgage guy on, he'll be able to explain that. But with interest rates going up right now, how is that affecting you as far as your return on your investment or you being able to resell the property later on?
Well, right now, interest rates, I still are at an acceptable point, I think. So and it's buying time, buying and selling time. I mean, it's summer. So right now I haven't had an issue moving properties. But as if those, you know, if the feds, you know, hike the rate up another, you know, half a point or point, and we get up to that 5.5, 6, I mean, you've seen it. You've seen it over 20 years, right? I mean, you get
When I bought my first house, my interest rate was 16%.
Yeah.
Well. Didn't think twice about it. I bought the house. That was it. And it worked.
Yeah. But to answer your question, people are still, you know, banks are lending. Everybody's lending. Mm-hmm. People are mortgageable. Everybody that exited back in 2007, 8, 9, we're 7 years past that. We're 2018.
Correct.
So you had a huge millions of people that left the home ownership, mortgage buying pool, whatever you want to call it, home ownership. They've all in the last 2 to 3 years have come back in. And that's why we're seeing, in my opinion, what we're seeing. The inventory is so low, the demand is so high, interest rates are still acceptable.
I read somewhere yesterday they were talking about the population growth that's what's spurring this boom. I don't think so.
I don't know. The population's been rising for how many years? I mean, I don't know. I'm not educated in that.
We're talking blue collar. We just work for a living, you guys.
But I think it's safe to say that the population's grown steadily over the last, I don't know, let's call it 100 years.
Yeah, but I don't see the mega mansions coming back at the pace that they were before,
right?
the monster houses. People are living a lot simpler in smaller houses. So the economy with the booming spurt.
Well, look at the tiny house movement. We can do a whole show on that.
Oh my God.
I mean, if you can live in 300 square feet, I probably could. I don't know. You couldn't. You like your nice, big, fancy houses.
I'm downsizing, my friend.
Yeah, I saw you downsizing up to the 5,000 square foot house on the lake that you were looking at. Wanted to.
We looked at it. We looked at it. But at the same time, the price wasn't right. We thought we could make a deal and make it work right, and we'd have a nice piece of property. But now that the tax just have changed, Trump's now the new property tax. You're allowed to write up only $10,000 worth of property taxes. Everything else, that you're not getting ready to write that off. And then as far as mortgages, you're only allowed to write off the first $500,000, or actually $750,000. So if you're getting a mortgage for over $750,000, you could only write $750,000 of that mortgage off. So, I mean, I know we're talking some huge numbers for the majority of people, but I mean, for our listeners in California right now or Arizona, I mean, people buy million-dollar homes all the time. You're not allowed to write all that off, and you're not allowed to write all those taxes off. So, in a way, the people that make more money are penalized by not being able to write that off. So if people think it's unequal or what have you, it really doesn't work out.
At the end of
the
day, you stayed disciplined. You didn't think it was the best, you know, long-term investment to buy the house on the lake. So you stayed where you're at and maybe sell that one and downsize.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to sell that one, downsize, and get something smaller, which it's not necessary. This way, you don't have to keep up that pace of where you're at. I mean, it's nice living in a larger home, and there are its benefits, but there are also downfall, the upkeep, the maintenance. And how about every time you want to leave town and go on vacation somewhere, you can't go anywhere because you got this or you got to do that. And you got this big house to maintain. I'm going to leave it empty for the wintertime or whatever, because that's the ultimate goal for me, to get the hell out of here and get down to Florida. I'm going to go south, you know?
Yeah.
So what else you got today?
Well, the only other thing I can think of is, you know, just buying and holding versus a fix and flip. You know, I mean, we'll touch on that in an episode of whether, you know, when I buy a property, it's identified already as either a rental that I'm going to stick in my portfolio, a buy and hold, or it's going to be a fix and flip, renovate and sell.
Let's go into that real quick. We got a little bit of time here, Jessica.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into that one real quick. You're a police officer.
Yeah.
Okay. You're out on disability right now because of issues with your
surgeries. I'll be going back. Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason you got into this is because you thought you were going to be laid off.
Correct.
So now you're not laid off, but you are off of work. And you'd be in real big trouble if you didn't build this rental portfolio that you started 8 years ago.
Well, yeah. Hindsight's 20/20, but that all comes down to that passive income, as we call it, you know?
Because before you open the door to your office, you got checks already in the mail at the beginning of the month.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's nice as long as you put good tenants in there. I mean, and then we'll touch on that
we
too.
We make it sound really easy with the tenants.
But I mean, we'll touch on that, how to find and vet, you know, good tenants. I mean, listen, if you have a property and the tenant for the most part leaves you alone and pays rent every month, besides a few minor repairs, it's a no brainer. You know, give me 20 of them. Give me 100 of them.
Yeah. I got one.
Yeah. And how's it working out? It working out?
This one now is finally, but after 8 years, I've had nothing but problems with people coming in and out, but I've never given up. And now I got a great tenant, you know, and again, a great return on my investment, almost a 30% return on my investment. So now it's working out okay, but I'm just not the landlord like you are.
Yeah.
You know, I have a commercial property that I lease out, which works out really well. It's almost like having six or seven homes.
Yeah.
You have a nice portfolio of homes.
But I tell everybody to either own zero or try to get to 10 or 20 and create a team in a
so you don't have
create
to
a business of it. I don't look at my houses or my rental properties as just rental properties. And if the hot water tank goes and it costs me $700 to replace it, most people would sit there and cry about it and call that a loss. And I just lost money. You didn't lose money. That was a business expense.
Correct.
If the other 19 properties didn't have any major repairs and you had money, $50, $7,500 set aside on each property that per month, you're still in the black. You're still okay. You know?
It's cost averaging is all it
is.
It's like buying in the stock market. You buy low, you sell high.
You got it.
Or you'll never find the bottom. You'll never find the top. So as long as you get around wherever you get, I think you do well. So if you have an expense on this one, but you have four more that had no expenses, you still made out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I just tell people, it's my own opinion, is to have a plan to build up to continue to add properties to the portfolio, whether it's one a year or one every 2 years. You'll be sitting there 10, 20 years from now with a nice little portfolio and the passive income, like you said, coming in. If you want to retire, you got 20 rent checks coming in.
Imagine $20,000 a month coming in. And even if you have to spend $5,000 a month in expenses, you still got $15,000 a month coming in when you're collecting Social Security or retired, or give it to a management company to manage for you.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, some people just aren't cut out to be landlords.
That's correct.
I mean, let's face it, anything we talk about in this show moving forward, you know, we're gonna give our advice, we're gonna give our opinion, we're gonna answer questions, we're gonna try to help out as much as we can. But there's certain things that just aren't for certain people. If you don't have the right temperament, if emotionally you're not tough, mentally you're not tough. I mean, really, I'd say stay out of the real estate game. I mean, it's right. Not easy. I mean, I'll hopefully have time on future shows to tell stories about some of the hurdles I've had to go through. I mean, just the other day, I've got an issue. I made 13 phone calls in an hour trying to resolve an issue of trying to find a sewer line that is almost unlocatable. Now, there's reasons for it, and I'll get it figured out. But my point is that if you're the type of person that's going to throw your hands in the air and cry about it at night and quit, and this is just me maybe being a little too direct, then you probably shouldn't get in the game. It is not easy. You can make a lot of money at it if you're good at it. If you surround yourself with good people and create a good network of and a good team of people, but you got to be able to muddle through it. I mean, like Winston Churchill said, if you're going through hell, keep going.
Don't stop. Otherwise, you're going to stay in there.
Don't quit. Yes, keep going.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're afraid, do it afraid. If you're scared, do it scared. If you're upset, it's okay. Do it
but
upset.
Just do it.
But keep going and get it done.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I think that's one of the biggest part about it is just being mentally, emotionally tough.
Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, if you can get through a full renovation on a house like you guys just did.
We did 100.
You kind of get done with it and you kind of feel like you could do anything, don't you? I mean, if we got through that and dealt with all that, the money, the contractors, the city, everything.
My wife had no idea regarding anything in a rehab.
Thought it was easy.
And when we got done with it, she's like, it wasn't bad. I mean, she was scraping nails off the floor. She was insulating the house herself. She was...
She's a tough girl.
She's a tough girl, right. But guess what?
Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Andrea. Hi, Dave. How are you? But at the end of the day... she learned it, and it's funny because now it makes her a better realtor knowing what she can tell her clients. And she's found you how many houses.
Yeah.
You know, now she knows what you go through every time and the headaches. And I mean, it took us 120 days to do a complete rehab, top to bottom, no studs, gutted to the studs.
You learn the numbers too. Not only do you learn the pitfalls or what to watch out for, but you also learn the numbers.
Yeah, she's got to keep me away because I'm way over budget, man. I just like spending
money.
I love spending money. I don't know what it is. It's just crazy. But at the end of the day.
I always got to hear about Tony. You know, man, I don't know where all my money's going. The guy makes a lot of money and never has it. I mean, you're asset heavy. We've talked about it.
Yeah, we're asset heavy. But I think at the end of the day, when the assets appreciate, you do well. And then it's time to get in and out. You can't fall in love with a property. You've got to just. Do something and do what you do and make your decision whether you're going to keep it, rent it, and is a source of income, or you're going to flip it, take the money, reinvest it. But always, once again, take the money and reinvest it.
Yeah, we'll try to help people identify whether a property they can, you know, either call in when we have that capability or comment on our page and we'll answer. They can run scenarios by us, whether I should buy and hold this, is it a good rental, or, you know, hey, here's the numbers, I'm thinking of fixing and flipping it. And we'll give our advice and we'll let them know our opinion on whether, you know.
Yeah, right on our Facebook page, there's a send us a message tab. Click on that, leave us a message. We'll follow up with you quickly. And then in our future episodes, we're going to have a telephone number you'll be able to call in and talk to us and ask us some questions live. And we're going to have, like Kevin said, we're going to have some special guests on here. So I think it's going to be really fun. I think you guys will get something out of it. And hopefully we can turn a couple of you guys into millionaires or at least start.
It's possible.
Absolutely.
And one of the quickest ways to increase your net worth and create cash flows, you know, becoming a real estate investor. So I think we're going to wrap up the show with that. If anybody out there has a house they want to sell for cash quick, go to my Facebook page, Cash, the number 4, Your House Now, or www.cash4yourhousenow.com. And likewise, if you've got a property that you want to list for sale or you have one identified that you want to buy, go ahead and give Tony a call at
586-773-4400, or go to our Facebook page, the Raffin Team on Facebook, or our website, talktotony.com. Thanks for tuning in, you guys, and we look forward to our future episodes and working out something good for everybody on this one, I think. Really
good. That's
right. Thank
you. We'll figure it
out. Take care.
You've been listening to Fix It and Flip It with Tony Raffin and Kevin McClellan. Be sure to stop by our Facebook page, like it, and follow. And come back again next week so you can arm yourselves with the tools and strategies to become a successful real estate entrepreneur. This is Fix It and Flip It.